everyone, and welcome to episode 127 of the Savvy Girls podcast. This is Savvy Girl Melanie, and I'm currently in Regina, Saskatchewan, trying to get this podcast done before I hit the road for Winnipeg later today. Winnipeg and spotty internet. Now, Savvy Girl Deborah also did a section of this podcast, but she's in New York, so hi, I'm Deborah. I love to knit. Look at me. I'm Deborah. So we're both sort of here. That was Deborah. From New York, in case you couldn't figure it out. But anyway, I am performing in just finished performing in Regina. Next, I'm heading to Winnipeg, and after that, Saskatoon. So if you're around, hey, and then after that, Edmonton, and then Victoria. So I will be podcasting from across the Canadian globe. But in this episode, there's some chat where I'm in the car. I recorded from the car yesterday and the day before a little bit. I don't know what Deborah did for her segment. It just appeared in my Dropbox. So I'm just going to put it on. Who knows? Who knows what's on this podcast? So sit back, take your knitting sticks, use them to stir a nice cold drink, and enjoy the show. And I say, wait, hey, it's just an ordinary day, and it's all your state of mind. At the end of the day, you just got to say it's all right. All right, so let's start this thing again. This is the third time I've started this podcast. Hello, everyone. This is Savvy Girl Melanie, and I am in Regina, Saskatchewan. Actually, I'm not in Regina, Saskatchewan anymore. I think I'm out of the city limits. I am heading east? Question mark? I'm heading somewhere to Swift Current, Saskatchewan, to perform. Where is Regina? Look it up on Google Maps. Where is Swift Current? I've got nothing. Maybe you should look that up on Google Maps too, and maybe call me and tell me how to get there. I think I just take this Highway 1. I just go and go and go. So in 2.5 hours, if I'm still on the road and there's no Swift Current, we're going to have some issues. All right, so let's see. Here I am in Savvy Dad's car heading to Swift Current. I may have gone home and stolen, borrowed the car. Thank you, Savvy Mom. Thank you, Savvy Bro, for giving up your car. What is now your car? I am on Fringe Tour, which means I am taking my show to various cities all around North America, and I am performing first in Regina, and I got hired to do 2 shows of Opera Mouse, my kids' show, in Swift Current during the Fringe Tour, which is great because, you know, it's extra work and it's a little side adventure. So I hopped in the car this morning. I'm driving to Swift Current to perform, and then I'm driving all the way back to Regina and performing there this afternoon. And then I'm doing the same thing tomorrow. So, hey, adventure on the Canadian prairies. Or rather, a lot of driving on the Canadian prairies. But it's gorgeous. There are fluffy clouds, like fluffy clouds that look like delicious meringue. I don't really like meringue. Look like delicious cotton candy. Kind of gray cotton. Looks like cotton candy that's been left out a little too long under a couch in a, maybe in a dorm room. That's the clouds, but the sky is blue, and there are silos and big trucks that I am passing and things, and hopefully coffee. There isn't any coffee, but it would be really great if there were coffee, was coffee soon, because I'm tired. My voice is tired. I'm tired. I'm really tired, but 61 kilometers to Moose Jaw. There'll be coffee in 61 kilometers. Now, the big question is, does Melanie have gas enough to make it to Moose Jaw? I was told it was like, I don't know, a couple, 20, 30 minutes away. This is more than 30 minutes away. I guess we'll see. I may be podcasting from the side of the road at the Alberta Prairies. Saskatchewan Prairies without gas. So hopefully that won't happen to me. All right, so this has had no knitting content yet. We are, 2 minutes and 53 seconds in. But there will be knitting content. I'll think of something. Don't worry. Always do. Okay, next thing. Fringe Tour. Because really, guys, I have no time to edit this. I am so busy. And there's a podcast due. And I think Savvy Girl Deborah, I think Deborah's doing something for the podcast. But that could always be the next podcast or, I don't know. Second half of this podcast. I just know that I thought I would be a good podcaster and do something. And hey, podcasting from the car. And it's pretty flat. It's pretty quiet. You don't really hear the rumbling of the car on the road. All right. So, focus, even though I'm really tired. And poor you guys. You were clever enough to download this. Lucky you. Lucky you guys. And I'm clever enough to think that I can be witty on the road at the horrible crack of dawn at 8:47 a.m. I don't know how you do it, people who get up earlier than this. I don't know. Anyway, so this is my, as I said, this is my third try starting this podcast. I've been on the road for 15 minutes, third try. This is it, though. We're doing it this time. I was in the middle of the last podcast when my phone rang, which is exciting because my phone doesn't ring very often. It's always a banner day when my phone rings. Maybe once a week. It rings twice a week. It rings. And it wasn't a friend. It wasn't the bank. That's good. It wasn't the wrong number. That's also good. It was the radio station in Swift Current to do an impromptu interview about my show Opera Mouse. That was a bit of a surprise because A, it's today, and B, nothing like someone calling you up and saying, hey, how you doing? And you know, I figure maybe I know them. So I said, hey, how are you doing? And she said, hey, you know, you're on the air. What? Really? Really? I haven't had coffee. Guys, it's before 9. I'm managing to drive and to be somewhat upright. Really? Really? Also on the radio? Guys, are you sure? So I tried to be clever because, you know, I'm nothing if not good at talking. However, I don't know how clever I was. I don't even know what kind of radio station it was. I think she said Magic 99. That sounds sort of either easy listening or religious. I don't think I said it. I was talking about a kid's show, so I'm pretty sure I didn't say anything that was bad religious-wise. So that's good. That's good. Okay, I haven't shamed myself this morning yet, except on this podcast, but too bad, guys. All right, so what else? I'm on Fringe Tour. I am in Regina. I was in Regina. I will be in Regina later today again. And I'm performing the show Red Hot Mama, which is about Sophie Tucker. So I'm sure those of you who are of the age where you watch the Ed Sullivan Show hopefully remember Sophie Tucker because she was on it quite a lot. But Sophie Tucker was born in the late 19th century and she died in the mid-1960s. I think 66. Again, Google. Time to get out your Google and get that going. And she was one of the most, maybe the most famous singer in North America. I admit I had not heard of her before my friend excitedly came to me and said he was writing a show for me to do. But now I know a lot about her. I watched a movie. I read two books. Book and a half. I read a book and a half about her. So that's great. I know somewhat a lot about her. She was born on the road between Russia and the boat that took her family to America. She settled in Hartford with her father, and he opened a restaurant, and they were Orthodox, so they were very Jewish religious, and she got married at 16, had a child, basically kicked the guy to the curb when she decided she wanted to be a singer instead, left the child for her sister Annie to raise, and then she went off to be a singer on the vaudeville circuit. Back in the day, there was Broadway, there was vaudeville, they were very different, they were two completely different things. There was also burlesque, which is different than the burlesque you know of today. It was risque, but not risque in the same overt way as burlesque is thought of today. Broadway was very much musical with a score. Vaudeville, however, was huge. It was done in these giant theaters with maybe 1,000 seats. There's still the big theater in New York, the Palace Theater, was one of the biggest. Pally was one of the biggest vaudeville theaters in the world, or in America, I suppose. It was a huge theater, not because of size, but because if you played there, you were done. That was the epitome of your vaudeville dreams, and it's still around. I'm not sure what's playing in it now, but I know Legally Blonde, Savvy Mom, Savvy Dad, and I went to see Legally Blonde the musical there at that theater. So it's now a Broadway theater. And then Savvy Deborah and I saw Annie at that theater. So it is now playing Broadway shows. I wish I had known that when I went there, that it was that theater. But it's pretty neat because a lot of the theaters were actually torn down, the vaudeville theaters. When movies came in, it pretty much was the death knell of vaudeville. However, back in the day, vaudeville was huge. There'd be a bill, so there'd be a list of performers, and there would be 20 so performers on this bill, and the bill would play twice. There'd be an intermission, and there would be one or two headlining acts. So these are the big acts, and then there were all sorts of other acts, and they were things from joke-telling, monologuing, singing, dancing, everything. Fred Astaire was in vaudeville. Judy Garland was in vaudeville. Everyone was in vaudeville. Nora Bays was a huge vaudeville star. But when vaudeville ended, most of these people, except the ones I've listed, okay, but most of these other people, most of the other people that I did not list because I don't know them, because their career ended when vaudeville essentially ended. However, Sophie Tucker was smart. And she changed with the times. So when movies came in, she moved to radio, she moved to movies, she ushered in the jazz era with her singing, she moved to television. She's basically lived and sang through all these crazy technological advances and saw the world change and saw the singing world change, and she became an institution. I think in the end she was more just, here I am, I'm being Sophie Tucker, not being someone named Sophie Tucker who's singing songs. But you know what? If you can be an institution, why not be an institution? Anyway, so my show is about her early life and how she became a star, and it's got some fantastic songs. It's got a couple Gershwin songs. I don't think there's any Irving Berlin in there, but there are a couple Gershwin songs. But there were a couple guys who wrote music. A lot of songwriters were writing music just for her, and there are some songs that were written just for her that I think are fantastic. There's also some songs that other people premiered originally, but she sort of took and made her own. And some of these fine hits include My Canary Had Circles Under His Eyes, Can't Sew a Button on a Heart, and Red Hot Mama. So yeah, that's my show. I had the second performance yesterday. There's 5 performances in Regina, so it's a bit low-key. There are some bloggers doing reviews. Hopefully I'll get a good review. But then next week it moves on to Winnipeg. In Winnipeg, they are rough. If they don't like your show, they will tell you. And that's when the big reviews start coming out. So I am getting this show Winnipeg ready, which is also a nice Canadian city. Maybe look it up on your Google. Google it. Yeah. So anyway. All right. So what was like? I'm saying so a lot because I'm too tired to not. Everyone's got a thing they do, and I think that's my thing. At least it's not or like. But anyway, that's different than so. Okay, I have a knitting story, though. Okay, I have a couple knitting stories I just thought of, and we're at 11 minutes and 5 seconds, so this is good. We're getting to a podcast. Aren't you lucky? First knitting story, but it's a Sophie Tucker story. So, Sophie Tucker was known for a few things. First, she was a Jewish performer. She grew up, as I said, in an Orthodox Jewish family. A lot of people hid the fact that they were Jewish back in the early 20th century. I mean, if you think of the entertainment business now, Irving Berlin, George Gershwin. I mean, his name was Gershwitz before it was Gershwin. Irving Berlin's name was Israel Balein. There were all these nice Jewish boys. They all sort of hid their name. Sophie Tucker, her name was Sophie Tuck. But Tucker, that didn't really un-Jewishize it at all. It just sort of made it nicer. Plus, she dumped her guy to the curb, so she didn't want to have the same name as Louis Tuck, who was her first husband. But she did not hide the fact that she was Jewish. She sang, well, she did it first, but I'm getting to that. She sang My Yiddish Mama. She really capitalized on the fact that she was Jewish. So good for her. Go Sophie.
Since making whoopee became all the rage, it's even got to the old birdcage. And my canary has circles under his eyes. I thought he'd never do anything wrong. Now he does snake hips the whole day long. And my canary has circles under his eyes.
Before I move on from Sophie Tucker, I do have a Sophie Tucker knitting story. So in the First World War, there was that huge campaign to knit for your soldiers. I lecture on this. I know quite a lot about this whole campaign. But I have a Sophie Tucker story relating to it, and this is my story. She was singing at some huge vaudeville theater somewhere. I forget exactly where. And there was a woman in the front row knitting, doing the knitting thing that she does. Knitting busily away. And she didn't seem to be giving the performer as much attention as perhaps the performer, Sophie, felt that she should be giving. So Sophie stopped the show and politely asked her to put her knitting away. Well, there was this huge backlash in the newspaper basically saying that Sophie Tucker was anti-America, and anti-war winning for America, and just a horrible, horrible, unpatriotic person. But, you know, I've been there, and I kind of don't blame her. I mean, she's performing her vaudevillian heart out, and people are just and I just kind of on her side for that. So yay, Team Sophie. Sorry, knitters. But that's my knitting story. Although I really have to finish this hat I'm working on, and I wish I could knit and drive, which I'm not doing because A, I don't know how to do yarn overs. I think the next line is, it's something like knit two together, yarn over, knit two together, yarn over an entire round. And that sounds A, hard, B, time consuming, and C, I don't know how to do yarn overs. So unless I could watch a YouTube video and knit and drive at the same time, which I can't, I'm not going to be doing that. So that's my first knitting story. Moving on to my second knitting story. So, okay, as I said, here I am in Regina. Yay, Regina. Or I was, like, a few minutes ago in Regina. And on the Fringe Tour, often, or in a lot of different performance situations, we are billeted. So we are hosted by local people, which is extremely nice of the local people. So nice. They open their house, sometimes their kitchen, to the performers. And it's really lovely. Sometimes it's less lovely. Sometimes you score and it's more lovely. I scored here in Regina. Not that way. I mean, in Calgary, I was extremely lucky because one of our listeners and our friend Fran let me stay with her. So that was really nice. And this is almost as nice as that. These people are fantastic. They have a lovely house. It's clean. It's quiet. It's a bit of a drive, but hey, what's 10 minutes when you're in Regina? I mean, that's fine. I don't mind being 10 minutes away to have a lovely bedroom and my own bathroom. And oh, the bliss of living with other people when you are on the road. But this one's great. This is great. However, the woman I'm staying with, Rebecca, she is a knitter. Capital K knitter. Knitter. She's a knitter. And she has two cats. And every night, well, she's cat sitting one cat and she has her own cat. And every night, her cat Sushi brings a ball of yarn up from her stash room and leaves it outside of the door, either her door or my door, depending on the night. And then the cat meows because she's really pleased with herself. So I'm feeling pressured right now, really a lot of pressure to knit, because this cat seems to think that it's her duty to remind me that, hey, there's yarn in the world. Why aren't you knitting? Meow, meow, meow. And it's kind of adorable, but it's also just like, really, cat, you are meowing up the wrong tree. And I really should finish my hat. So that's my second, knitting content. This is what you get, people. You get knitting content. And now I can talk about the bird. So I know Deborah allowed me to talk about the bird, Miga, our bird, my sparrow. She thinks it's hers, but it's really mine. Or the sparrow, a little bit, but I'm going to talk about her more because I love Miga, and I'm not going to see her for the next 2 months almost, which is sad. I guess a month and a half. So as we said at the last podcast, Miga is a little bird that Deborah found as a birdling and brought home and fed through a little eyedropper every 3 seconds or something, whenever the baby cried and cried for food, and instead of dying, Miga grew up a little bit. So it's fantastic, the little bird. She lived, and we saved her, and I realize, as we said before, they say don't bring wild birds home, etc., etc. However, only 20% of sparrows live to grow up, baby sparrows. If she is indeed a sparrow, and we're still a bit up in the air about that, but we're calling her a sparrow because it's legal to keep sparrows, and her markings do look very sparrow-like, and we'll know once she gets her adult coat. What are you going to do at this point? She's our sparrow. So, Miga is adorable. I don't think it's possible to properly explain how adorable this bird is, because it's one thing to see people with tame little birds who will fly over and sit on your hand and quack, quack, and you give them food, but Miga's different. Miga thinks, I mean, she can fly, and she's definitely a bird. She likes to poke about at her wing and ruffle her little feathers and chirp, and she does sleep with her little beak tucked behind her wing. But she sleeps with her beak tucked behind her wing, curled up on her pillow, depending on whose room she's in, or in Deborah's hand, or on my chest. She wants to be pressed against one of us all the time. And she thinks if we're eating something, she'll fly right over, land on our chest, and try to eat it from our mouths, because we're mama bird, right? So that's what you do with mama bird. So she's not just a bird who happens to be tame. She's like a child who happens to be a bird. She loves to play. If we're at the computer, she will come over and try to help type. She plays games for cats on the iPad, which doesn't work because she peck, peck, pecks with her beak, and you need heat to actually touch the iPad, so she needs help playing little laser games for cats on the iPad. But she gets really excited when the iPad comes out because she's like, Deborah, Deborah. Well, she doesn't talk, but still, Deborah, Deborah, it's time to play. So it's absolutely the most special experience I think someone could, I guess people say that about having kids, but okay, aside from perhaps spawning offspring, which is cool also, that's fantastic. I'm not saying I don't want to do that. However, up till now, if one has not made a baby or adopted a baby, this is possibly the most amazing experience you will ever have, is raising a sparrow. It is just, it's so special. It's just so nice. She's even ignoring Deborah while she spins for Tour de Fleece, which is fantastic because the bird is clearly of discerning taste when it comes to hobbies. Clearly. But the bird is so cute. She'll disappear and do business. I don't know what she does or where she goes. Probably, I think she just goes for naps under the couch. But she'll come back and, you know, she'll be all perky and start twittering. When we would come home to the apartment, she'd come out from wherever she is and she'd be all excited. Like, hey guys, hey, I'm here. You forgot me. Next time I'm coming, right? Hey guys. She lets off heat in a way that I guess birds do. You know, I sort of wondered how a bird keeps their eggs that warm, but they actually sort of crouch down and let off almost like a poof of heat. You think of it reminds me of an iron steaming things. So that's what the bird does. She'll just sit down and suddenly let off a poof of heat. And it's so cute because she'll do that on us or in our hands, you know, and just suddenly there's this burning little oven of a bird. And you know then it's sleeping time. Really cute. Really, really, really cute. Deborah has taught her that if you cup your hands and sort of start moving your fingers in to cup it, the bird will, Mika will fly over and crawl in, like, crawl inside that cupped area, and she knows that that's cuddle time. Cuddle time. It's a bird, and she's cuddling. She likes being scratched between her wings. She completely doesn't mind just being grabbed from above, because I remember when we had budgies, they were totally happy to hop on our finger and ride around, and they would land on our shoulders or our heads, but they didn't like being grabbed from above, because then your wings are constricted, and I don't blame them. But Mika, yeah, she's chill, she's fine with that. She's interested in the gerbils, but she doesn't, well, she kind of wants to peck their eyes. She's pecked our eyes. She's pecked Deborah's eyes quite hard, actually, so she likes to peck eyes. Thing. She does this thing. But the gerbils are safe in their gerbil cage. No eyes are being pecked. And also, the gerbils have little teeth, so they could probably take care of themselves somewhat. What else? I miss the bird. By the time I get back, we'll know what she is, and she'll have her adult feathers, and she'll be all grown up. But hopefully, she'll also still be adorable and cuddly and poofy and warm and nice. So that would be really great to get back and still have a loving little bird who thinks I'm her mom. Oh, she likes Celine Dion. I think we brought that up before. She likes the Tour de France. She was twittering the other day. Every little while she's twittering to herself. She gets super, super into it. She just starts tweeting and she's happy and she gets thrilled. She's a thrilled little bird and she'll just sort of get into it. Like tweet. And she'll be so happy about it, she'll often put herself to sleep. So she'll just tuck her little head behind her wing and she'll still be tweetering. And it's as if she tells herself a lullaby, and it's so cute. But Celine Dion has made her do that, and Tour de France has also made her do that. So she's a bird of discerning tastes. She likes her sports, and she likes... Okay, she has no taste at all when it comes to the music. Sorry, little bird, Celine Dion. However, she does like Tour de France, so that's good. And I guess that's all the bird talk. I haven't seen her for almost 2 weeks. I don't really have anything else to say about her. She's a nice bird. I love her. She's a really nice bird. She makes me so happy. I just want to spread the joy. I just want everyone to see what a nice little bird she is. Because she is so cute. I think she used to just eat millet when I left town, and Deborah has actually managed to expand her diet to regular birdseed and, well, she'd eat broccoli too, but I think she eats egg now, which is good. It's good protein for a bird to eat eggs. It's not really cannibalism because it's not a dead anything. It's just egg. So, yeah. Anyway, here I am in Moose Jaw. The guy in the next lane with the horse carriage on his truck keeps giving me the stink eye. I don't know why. It's not as if I'm knitting. There's nothing to give me the stink eye about. But I guess I will go and find a gas station and coffee, because I probably will be a lot more linear with all those things inside me. Not gas. Gas inside the car. Coffee inside me. Okay. More later. Keep knitting.
I can't imagine him going wrong or doing something shady. Perhaps he's just worn out through singing songs to some canary lady. I fed him birdseed, but now it denotes that birdseed must have been wild, wild oats, 'cause my canary has circles under his eyes.
I last recorded yesterday when I was leaving Regina for Swift Current. I drove here, I performed, drove back to Regina, performed there. This morning, drove back to Swift Current, performed here, and now I'm driving back to Regina to perform there again in about 4 hours. So here I go. Now, I wasn't sure whether I should use some of the stuff that I recorded yesterday, not because it's not about knitting, but because maybe an hour after I got to Swift Current yesterday, Deborah called and the bird died. And it isn't fair, because I love that bird. Deborah loves that bird. I think we love that bird, Miga, more than probably people should love a bird. But she died. She was sick. She got sick pretty much immediately, and Deborah rushed her to the vet, and she just didn't make it to the vet even. And now we don't have a bird anymore, which isn't fair. I know that things were a little crazy with three gerbils, the dog, both of us, Deborah's entire stash, my piano and accordion, and a bird, but it was our bird. And I love that bird. It's not fair. You know, I'm getting kind of tired of things dying. And unfortunately, and I know maybe it sounds callous to talk about replacing kind of the thing you loved more than anything in the world immediately, but I really want a bird. It wouldn't be Miga, but it was the most special thing in the world to have a sparrow like that sparrow. And I don't know that it could happen again, but maybe it could. So I guess the story of Miga was short, but amazing. I think it was the most amazing month I ever had. She was like a gift. It was like magic. Honestly, it was like a little bit of magic every day. You woke up and you think, what is the bird going to learn today? What is the bird going to do today? And watching her discover things and share them. I mean, she wanted to communicate. She managed. She communicated just fine. When she wanted something that was in a drawer, she'd fly circles around the drawer. When she wanted something she couldn't reach, she'd look down and then look at us and then tweet. You know, if she wanted us to find her, she would tweet. If she wanted to find us, she would fly to us. I mean, all she wanted was to hang out and be cuddled and be mothered by us. And she's a bird, and it's amazing. And I think it was the most special experience of my life. And even though it did not last the 20 years I hoped it would last, it lasted just over a month. It was kind of an amazing month. So I'm not sorry at all about Miga. But I miss her already. I just talked for what? 15, 20 minutes about how great a bird she was, and now Deborah and I don't have her anymore. But I mean, Deborah took care of her really well. She did everything she could, and I'm going to be on the lookout from now on for a sparrow that might need a home. So, there you go. Not 3, not 12, don't worry, Deborah, but maybe one little sparrow. Anyway, I am right now driving, as I said, back towards Regina. I I'm driving through the prairies. Tomorrow I'm driving to Winnipeg, so there's a lot of driving going on, about to go on. And the show went really well today. The kids were great. It was a good crowd. The kids participated. Yesterday I was actually pretty upset about Miga, and the show went on. I did the show and it was a show, but it was hard. It was hard. What can I say? And today was a lot easier to do. So it was a more fun show. It was an easier show to do. Better crowd today because the kids were slightly older. There were more kids. And then I went out in the farmers. Actually, I was out in the farmers market before the show. I sang on. They have a live band, so I sang in a band break to sort of bring people into the show, and it worked. And afterwards, I went out to buy a couple books from the SPCA book booth there at the market, because why not? You know, give some 25 cents to a good cause and get something to read while I'm touring this summer, since my memorizing is largely, well, about half done. I still have another show to memorize for Edmonton, a Gershwin show, but there's time. I think I can indulge in the luxury of a few books right now. Plus 25 cents, seriously, good price. So I was doing that, and actually I did, at this Chautauqua Festival in Swift Current, I did my Knitting Nell show last year, so it's really neat that people remembered me from singing in the farmer's market last year. And last year it was raining, and I didn't think anyone was there. Everyone was hiding in their booths, so for me it felt kind of futile last year, but a full year later, people say, oh, you're that knitting girl. And I thought, great, my legacy in Swift Current, Saskatchewan is as the knitting girl. So there's irony for all of you. But even more ironic, so I was feeling very sentimental about my bird. At least I didn't start bawling like a baby in the middle of my show last night. It was during a song, so I made it look emotional. It's okay. But, so I was feeling kind of sentimental about the bird that I love more than pretty much anything in the world, ever. Ever. And I passed a booth with crochet at it. And the woman had crocheted some table protectors, things you put pots and pans on, and they're in the shape of chickens. But the chicken kind of looked like Miga. And they're horrible. And they were $10. So, long story short, I am currently in the car with a crocheted chicken on the seat next to me. And we're heading towards Regina together. And, yes, I know. Bring it on. Bring it on. Not only did I buy crochet, but I bought crochet to remind me of the thing that I loved more than anything ever in the world. So, there you go. There you go. Bring on the ridicule. Savvy Mom, it's really cute. What can I say? You should crochet these. All right. So, what else is there to say? There are lots of knitters around. There's in Chautauqua at the theater, one of the girls, the women working there, young women working there, was knitting two socks on one round stick. And whatever you call that, loopy stick, and toe up. So there was all these toes everywhere, and it just looked really cool to be doing two socks. But you know what would be cooler? If someone knit two socks for you, me, so that would be cooler. But it was still neat to see her knitting. I mean, today is a sentimental day. If I'm getting sniffy over the youth of today learning to knit and carrying on their tradition, I hate knitting. This isn't good. This isn't good. Chicken, this isn't good. No, the chicken's got nothing, since it is a crocheted chicken. And the beak is not crocheted to talk, sadly. But anyway, so there's knitters. There was that knitter at that theater. There, the woman, as I mentioned, the woman I am billeting with is definitely a big K-knitter, a knitter. I woke up this morning, came downstairs, and her mother and father were over, and she and her mother were reading a book about sock patterns. So this seems to be the day of the sock. There's no escaping it. Socks, bring on the knitting people, bring it on. Meanwhile, I'm kind of stuck at my hat because the next line of instructions I have is, I think I may have talked about this, but it's knit two together yarn over, which seems confusing and hard, and I don't feel like doing it. And since no one will do it for me, it is just sitting in the very pretty knitting bag. It's got mustaches all over it. It was a present when I went to Utah, but it's not getting finished at all. So that's sad. I guess I don't have anything else. I am singing a Gershwin song tonight that Let's Call the Whole Thing Off, and I have to go over the words to that a couple times, and Ooh, and I have a chai tea that's melting. The cold chai frappuccino thing. You know what? Local coffee shops, that's one thing. Driving around the country, trying these little fancy drinks at local coffee shops is a huge treat because they're way better than Starbucks or Second Cup, and it's kind of fun. So that, for me, that's my little treat, driving about here and there. So that is delightful. I have to drink it. Like I said, it's melting, and I had forgotten about it in my talking about my chicken here. I'm almost tempted to put this chicken up as a prize, but I really want to keep it. So anyway, here we go. I'm going to keep driving, and that's all.
I'm a sparrow bird. My colors aren't fair or fine. My beauty's not preferred.
Hello, savvy listeners. This is Deborah. I'm really pleased to be able to give you a little bit of an update on what I've been doing and what I've been working on and what I've made lately. So first off, I took the first week of July off of work. I had both Canada Day and the 4th of July off, which meant 2 days off in a 5-day work week, so I just bridged it. Actually, I ended up going into the office on the Monday because I had so much to do. But I was only there half a day, and then I took the other 2 days off. So I had a nice long weekend, or a long couple of weekends. And during that time, I got a lot done. For the first few days of that week, Melanie was in town, and she was getting her performance ready. She's getting her play ready. I'm sure she's talked about it on the podcast, her play Red Hot Mama, which is a Sophie Tucker show. She needed a few things for her costume, and one was a handkerchief. That was very easy. That was kind of a quick project. But she also needed a fascinator. And if you're not familiar what a fascinator is, it's kind of the mini hats that women, you often see them with Kentucky Derby pictures or, what do you call her, the Duchess of Cambridge. Kate is known, I think, for wearing fascinators. You kind of wear it on the side of your head, and it's a mini hat that usually have feathers and ribbon and sparkles on it, and it's usually big. Anyway, so Melanie needed one of these. So I watched a YouTube video or two. Then we went on a trip to the textile, or the, what do you call it? The fabric district, the textile, what do you call it? The fashion district in New York, and we bought supplies to match her dress. So her dress was a gold, red, and black. And so we bought golden yellow feathers and gold colored, what do you call it, netting, and gold Swarovski crystals. Anything else in gold? I'm not sure. I think that's it. And then we bought red feathers. We bought a black base and some black feathers. I had glue and I had thread, and over the course of one evening and one morning, I just sort of made it. I've never made hats before. I just added one piece at a time, one part at a time. I had no idea what I was doing, and frankly, no great hat making skills, but I learned a few things. Basically, you can do to feathers anything you can do to hair. So you can cut them, you can curl them, you can dye them. And what else I learned is that I'm actually not that bad at fascinator making. And the end result was actually really beautiful. I'm so happy with it. Melanie and her director asked for it to be large. They wanted something with lots of height and lots of movement, and that's what I made. It had feathers sticking up, and I have netting, and I have ribbon, and there are sparkles on it, and it's glorious. And I attached the whole thing to a headband so that Melanie didn't have to worry about attaching it to her hair or clipping it in. The end result was also quite hard to pack, but frankly, that wasn't my problem. I was tasked with making it. I did that. They said they wanted height, so that's what they got. And Melanie, I know she struggled a little bit to get it on the airplane and across borders, but at least I did my part. And then after Melanie left, I worked on a few different projects. So first of all, I did a little bit delayed spring cleaning, so I guess early summer cleaning. I pulled out my appliances and I cleaned underneath and behind them. I cleaned and organized kitchen drawers and cupboards. I didn't get to the whole house, but I got a good amount done, and I'm feeling much better about the cleanliness of my kitchen, to tell you the truth. You know, I'm renting this place, so I knew that there was dirt behind and around the appliances that had been there longer than I've been here. And I just, you know, and especially in a city where bugs can be a problem. We don't have bugs, but I'd like to keep it that way. So I feel really good knowing that it's nice and clean underneath my stove and behind my dishwasher, behind the trash compactor. I wasn't able to move the fridge. I think the fridge is built in. I don't even see... the fridge is built in, so I'm not able to move it. But everything else I got clean. Then I started with some sewing. So when Savvy Bro was in town, and if you remember, he was in town... If I remember, he was in town a month and a half ago, perhaps? Maybe 2 months ago? Probably more like a month and a half. When he was in town, he expressed interest in wearing pocket squares with his suits. We went shopping, and we had a great experience shopping. So he bought some new suits, and he needed some pocket squares to match. We had gone to Mood to buy fabric, and Mood is the fabric store... Well, it's a wonderful fabric store. And so he picked a variety of different designs. Most of it was in a fairly lightweight silk fabric. He got one tie silk, the kind of silk that you would make a tie out of. He bought a couple of just crisp white cottons, some with some texture design in them, and then just plain. I kind of stepped up and wanted to help him. So first of all, we were going to do them together while he was in town. And I bought a rolled hem foot for my machine, like a special presser foot. I tried my best to use it, and the silk was, frankly, it was just too fine and too slippery in order to make it work. Then I tried pressing the fold. So, you know, pressing it twice and pinning it down, and it worked. That worked really well for the cotton fabrics. The silk was just too delicate. So then I settled on hand rolling and sewing the edges on all of these. They're about 12 by 12 squares. And frankly, it takes a long time. It takes me about one evening to do each one with teeny, teeny, tiny little stitches. And it doesn't have the machine look to it, but they've actually turned out wonderfully. I've made quite a pile of them, almost two in every color. And so if he picked six or seven fabrics, then there were at least 12 already done, with more to come. I know he'd probably, other than the white ones, he probably doesn't need even more than one in each fabric. But he paid for the fabric. You know, it belongs to him, and... So I might as well make him a nice collection. So in case something happens to one of them, he'll have a second version in the same color that he can just pull from a drawer. And I'm kind of proud of them. I like them a lot. And then the Tour de France started. Most people are familiar with what that is. It's the big bike race. Every year, along with the Tour de France, there is, and it generally happens on Ravelry, but there's a virtual Tour de Fleece. Which the idea is while the cyclists are spinning their way across France on their bicycles, you spin your way on your spinning machine or on your spindle throughout the tour. And so it's 3 weeks, and the idea is to set yourself a goal or multiple goals throughout the tour, and then, well, work on them throughout the three-week period. The tour is the only sport that I turn on independently. It's the only one I watch, and I just love it. And I can't even explain why it's... But I like the characters, I like the teamwork, I like the individual achievement, I like the crashes, I like the beautiful vistas and the little history lessons you get as they go by different castles and lakes and rivers and towns. I just really enjoy it. Every other year for the Tour de Fleece, I've picked a raw fleece and processed it from scratch, or at least attempted to process it from scratch. But frankly, the last couple of years I've fizzled on it and really was not very successful. And this year I just decided I don't feel like working with a raw fleece. I just went through my fiber collection and I took a basket and I collected a variety of different fibers, different rovings, some colorful, some natural colored, and I just thought I'll work through my basket. If I finish my basketful, then I can always add more. I added what I thought was not an impossible, but a challenge amount of fiber to work through during a three-week period. I also had a fleece that I had started spinning. It's a white Romney fleece that I had bought as a raw fleece and then sent away to be processed. And I had spun about a third of it, but I wanted to finish spinning it. it's been going well. I'm doing far more spinning than I normally do. I go through phases with spinning. Sometimes I spin a lot, and then other times that I don't spin at all, and I focus on knitting. And I guess that's kind of normal, is that I start working on a project, a knitting project, and I only want to knit. And then I start working on a spinning project, and I only want to spin. So right now I'm doing a lot of spinning. I finished spinning all the singles of the Romney fleece that I was working on. I spun that woolen style, so I spun it in a very airy, open style. It's not super soft, but it looks good, and it's not perfectly even. In the end, it will even out to hopefully make a fairly consistent light DK, probably light worsted yarn. I'm doing it 2-ply. It'll probably make a hard-wearing sweater. So I finished spinning the whole thing, and I've plied maybe a quarter. So I've plied 3 skeins, done, and there are many, many more to go. Well, I'm just looking at my pile, and it's a fairly significant pile left to ply. Hopefully it will, the pile eventually will all disappear and turn into yarn. For the next spinning project, I took all my odds and ends. So I had a bunch of fiber samples that I got for free or in sampler packs, all about a half an ounce to 1 ounce of fiber, and I spun them up one after the other into one single skein. All told, I probably had around 5 ounces of fiber or yarn. I had never successfully chain plied, or what they call Navajo plied, but I wanted to preserve the color, the different colors and the different fibers. And so to practice for working with one of my more expensive gradient rovings, I decided to chain ply. So first of all, just to explain a little bit better, if you spin up yarn, and let's say you want a traditional 2-ply or a traditional 3-ply, basically you spin singles on 2 or 3 bobbins. So let's talk about a 3-ply. If you want to do a 3-ply, you divide your fiber into 3 even sections. You spin on 3 bobbins. You take those bobbins and then you ply it all together. But what happens is that it's almost impossible, because spinning, you know, if you're not doing it, well, on a machine, if you're doing it on your own, you're not a machine, so you're not fully consistent. There's always variation. So what happens is that the different colors get mixed together. So you end up with more of a barber pole effect. Well, barber pole can be beautiful and appealing, and in fact, I really like spinning that, and I really think that it turns out very pretty. There are some times where you want to preserve the individual color. So if you want to preserve it, you mean, let's say if you're spinning with blue and then green and then purple, rather than having yarn that mixes blue and purple, blue and green, blue and blue, purple and green at different points, you want to have all the blue together, all the green together, and all the purple together. And so chain plying, just imagine a crochet chain with loops that aren't pulled too tight. And then you just add twist to the chain, and that's it. You make the chain with your fingers, and then each loop can be anywhere from a few inches to maybe half a foot long or longer, depending on the spinner. But that's pretty much all. It's just it's a crochet chain. But what happens is that if you're working in a green section, you're spinning green with green, green with green, green with green, and then you flip to the blue section and you're doing the blue together. And you're working off of one long single rather than 3 shorter singles. And in the end, it's a 3-ply yarn. It's not exactly the same looking as a traditional 3-ply, because you do end up with one little section that's folded every time you do another loop. Once it's knitted up, it's really hard to tell. It's hard to tell to see that little loop, and it looks very, very similar to a 3-ply, but it's a different way of working with color. So, but I had never successfully chained or Navajo plied. I had tried once before and I got all tangled. And I have some more expensive fibers roving that are gradient, so they're supposed to transition from one color to the next, that I knew I would want to chain ply. I decided that this would be a great opportunity to practice. I pulled out my favorite spinning book, which is The Spinner's Book of Yarn Designs by Sarah Anderson. I followed the instructions and it didn't turn out too badly at the end. There are a few places in the yarn that are a little overspun. The colors are a bit of a mishmash, but that's not as a result of the spinning or the plying. It's a result of having a mishmash of little samples that I spun together. But overall, it created a nice 3-ply yarn that's going to make a very interesting something. Something multicolored and mishmashy, but it, not as a result of the spinning. It's going to be as a result of the colors and the different textures and fibers. So my next project, Using my newfound skill with chain plying, I decided that it would be time to work with one of my gradient dyed fibers. So I pulled out a skein that I bought from Etsy from the seller Corgi Hill Farm. It was a Polwarth Tussa silk. It started with a dark brown and then turned turquoise and then went to a light brown. So how did I spin it? I divided it into sections with a brown and then a brown to turquoise section number one, brown to turquoise section number two, then full turquoise, then turquoise to brown section one, then turquoise to brown section two, and then full light brown. Why did I do that? Is because the roving was quite thick and I wanted to split it lengthwise in order to spin from thinner sections, but I also wanted to preserve the color transitions. So if I had divided it, let's say all of it in half, then I would be spinning the color transition through twice. I wanted to have nice long colors and nice long transitions. The spinning was fun and the fiber was easy and a pleasure to spin. And I was really happy to work with it. But in the end, I was a bit disappointed with the dye job, frankly. It wasn't a great gradient. It had really short transition sections and really quite abrupt changes from one color to the next with only, I don't know, a few inches of transition in between. To me, a gradient, a proper gradient, should slowly change from one color to the next. Despite my efforts in spinning it to preserve the dyeing, this will end up creating more of a long stripe effect than a gradient effect. If I were to knit it in a shawl, it will probably look like three different color sections, dark brown, turquoise, light brown. I was hoping for a more organic, a more subtle transition. In the end, I'm happy with the yarn I made, and I'll pick a project that'll make best use of the color blocks. And now, what I've started working on this evening, I've started working on a beigey, orangey, creamy roving, colored roving that I bought at the Malabrigo factory how many years ago? Wow. A little while ago, because it's been a while since I've been living in that part of the world. I'm trying to branch out from my standard weight, DK weight, two-ply yarn. So I perused the Spinner's Book of Yarn Design, so my favorite spinning book, and decided to make a spiral yarn. I'm trying to spin a thick single, and frankly, it's harder than it sounds to make a single both thick and even. And then I'll ply it with a commercial silk thread. So I have a pack of silk threads that I bought for something else. It's going to be perfect for this, and they're 100% silk, I think. What does the package say? 100% silk, with its natural beauty of a glossy shine that is smooth to the touch. 2, 3, 4. I have 6 different colors, so I'm going to pick something that goes well or contrasts well with the color of the roving. Once the thick single is done, I'll be plying it with the silk thread. When I ply it, I'll have more tension on the thread than on the single, which should result in the single almost spinning around the thread, and it'll hopefully, supposed to, create a spiral look. It will be different, at least. I'm not quite sure what I would knit with it, but part of spinning is the creativity, the experimentation with spinning in and of itself. I'm sure there will be something beautiful to make out of a perfectly spun spiral yarn, which it's already not perfect, but just don't tell anyone. So what else has been going on? I have a cousin getting married in September, and I'm doing everything I can to resist the urge to knit her an afghan as a gift. Oh, not a good idea. It's not practical. I probably don't have enough time to make it, and they really don't want physical gifts. I wrote to her, and I flat out asked, look, what do you want? What will make you happiest? And she said that they're hoping to get money to put towards a purchase of a home. So I'm sitting on my hands, and I'm not going to buy the yarn that's in my virtual shopping cart on yarn.com, and instead I'm going to put the money I would have spent towards a gift for her. But man, I really want to buy this yarn and make the afghan. I already know what afghan it would be. In other knitting news, I knit little Miga, who was the sparrow that I rescued, a nest. And it's really cute. I found a pattern online, but it's a really simple pattern. Basically, you double or triple strand yarn, you use a large needle, you knit in stockinette for about 3 or 4 inches, which then rolls down on the outside to create nest edges. You work in the round, obviously, and then you purl one row, or one round, and then you decrease each round to create a flat bottom. And I knit one in a few hours. Miga wasn't sure about the nest. She had it for 3 nights and finally spent the 3rd night in it. But then yesterday when I was at work, she got sick during the day and I came home to find her almost gone. She was barely breathing and lying on her back. I didn't panic, but I, you know, oh, poor thing. I scooped her up and rushed her to the vet, and it only took me about 5 minutes to walk there, but she passed away in my hands while I was on my way. And poor little thing. I miss her. I'm actually really sad about it, and so was Melanie. She was just such a joy to have around, and such personality, and it's always hard to lose a pet, even a pet you've had for a short while. I don't want to get upset again. I've been upset quite a bit in the last day and a half. I don't really know what happened. I just, sometimes birds don't thrive, and, you know, maybe she, I don't know. She just got sick. But all this to say is that I knit a bird's nest, and it was cute, and it was easy, and I knit it from odds and ends of washable sock yarn, triple-stranded, so I could wash it again. So I could wash it, and then wash it again, and then wash it again. And with that, I think I've given you the big update. It is late, and I'm going to head to bed. If you're participating in the Tour de Fleece, then, you know, keep spinning. If you're not, then, well, whatever project you're working on, whatever creative endeavor, keep it up. On the next episode, I'll be giving you more updates on, well, what I've been creating.
So y'all will remember, I just used y'all for you Southern listeners, y'all will remember a while back I said that when we had 500 likes on Facebook, we would pick some random winners. And we did. However, the way it works on Facebook, as far as I can tell, is it's impossible to actually contact those people to tell them they have won, which is actually pretty inconvenient because, hey, lady wants her prizes, right? So we posted it on the Facebook page, and unfortunately, it probably didn't show up on these fine ladies' feeds. I picked two winners, one for the best comment pretty much the best comment in the last couple days, and I just thought it was really, made me laugh. So she wins a prize, and as promised, the random winner, who also wins a prize. So I do not know how to contact you, random winners. So if anyone knows these people, maybe find them, tell them they won a prize. I guess we'll wait a couple weeks, and if I haven't heard from them, pick another winner. I don't know. So the random winner of our Facebook contest is, drumroll, Beth Clausen. So Beth, you look pretty cool. I think I wrote you on Ravelry, so check your Ravelry mail. If you know Beth, tell her she's won. Like, hey, Beth, I'm sure someone, I mean, there are knitters everywhere. So come on, Knitting Brigade. Let's tell Beth she gets a prize. It's a pretty nice skein of yarn, too. And as a secondary winner, Sue Pitts Cohen. You win! I really, really liked your comment about why is there a bird in your house? You know, I had been posting bird pictures and nobody actually just asked the obvious question. She made me smile. So, Beth Clausen, Sue Pitts Cohen, you are our grand winners. Good for you, hooray! Please contact us because otherwise you don't win. Everyone loses. I guess Deborah gets to keep yarn, so she wins. But everyone else loses. So sad. Sad for you all. Except for Beth and Sue. Please contact us. You win!
It's neat and it's sweet. It's a ding-dong treat. Little socks for little feet.
Just sitting with your knitting all day long.
You know, knitting's friendly and knitting's fun.
Knitting's good for everyone. And that is why we sing this knitting song.
Let's knit one purl, two. What's a knitter gonna do with a gall?
Thank you so much for listening to episode 127 of the Savvy Girls podcast. If you'd like to reach us, well, I'm on the road, so either wave out your window if you live somewhere in Canada, and I will likely be driving by or performing near you. Deborah can be reached at deborah@savvygirls.ca. I actually can be reached at melanie@savvygirls.ca. We are on Ravelry, Savvy Girl Deborah, Savvy Girl Melanie. See, I'm putting you first, Deborah. Look at this. Look what you get when I do the conclusions. We are on Facebook, Savvy Girls Podcast. Join us. I put a lot of things. Maybe it doesn't have to do with knitting all the time, but I think they're interesting. So, hey, come to our Facebook page. Be part of the discussion. Come to our Ravelry group, Savvy Girls Podcast. We have a lot of fun there. We're going to be announcing a pretty great contest, I think, on the next episode. And I already have some great prizes for that, like really nice prizes. So there'll be prizes, there'll be more prizes. So come join our groups. There will be a contest announced soon. I'm sorry, Savvy Bro. He does pretty much all the work anyway. So Savvy Bro, you can reach him at podcast@savvygirls.ca, and he is Savvy Bro on Ravelry. So that's all for now, I suppose. Next episode, I will be in Winnipeg. Deborah will be in New York. It's her birthday episode, I suppose. It's coming up. Or almost birthday episode, and who knows what'll happen. There are always things that happen. Come be part of our crazy lives with knitting sometimes and sometimes not knitting. Until next time, tend to your knitting, kitten.
Cardigan would look silly without lime green stripes.
Well, don't shout.
I'll shout if I want to. And do you know why?
Why?
Because I hate knitting.